With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When they show a little weakness and they smell the blood and then they can grab them by the,
you can say it,
penis.
Today is a very special year in review. We have a ton of listener Twitter audience questions. Here to my left is Renee Stubbs. And also a special guest here in New York, joining us in the studio for the first time, despite many, many, many appearances on the podcast, Andrea
Petkovic.
That's you.
That's me.
Fashion correspondent.
Cultural attaché.
We start today's episode, which I'm going to edit into two because it's just so long and so chock full of amazing anecdotes, funny asides, and amazingly good answers to questions, into two parts. But we start sort of recapping this year, this wonderful year that we've had, by talking a little bit about Fed Cup.
The end. It's funny. We thought we were going to wrap up the year, but we ended up talking about the last event we saw because it was fresh in our minds. We didn't even talk about who won the Grand Slams.
We didn't talk about it. But we kind of did in the last episodes. And I guess when you have episodes every now and then, you always mention it here and there. So.
Yeah. Just since this will live at the beginning of the episode, is there any sort of particular performance or things that you want to call out from the year that didn't really get a lot of attention in the last quarter of it, but still are worth mentioning?
I think the craziness of the WTA, the women's tour with Bianca Andreescu. I mean, that's what she did this year.
Bianca's year was insane.
Was Indian incredible.
Wells, Toronto,
she was at the Naomi US Osaka, Open. What Naomi did the previous year of this new name, this superstar.
Yeah.
Bianca is a superstar. Let's hope she can physically be able to handle the rest of her career. But what she did this year of winning, I mean, Indian Wells and then Canada and then the US Open. Are you kidding me? And the craziest match I've seen in my entire tennis career. That match, I mean, not as far as, you know, the match itself. I mean, I've seen better matches, obviously. But the crowd and the atmosphere at the US Open this year made the Osaka situation the year before even like a distant memory, if you can believe that, with Bianca. And that crowd at the US Open was unbelievable.
And her mom.
And her mom and the
mom
dog
is a legend.
So, I mean, a new superstar is born on the WTA tour, which is crazy.
Question: do you think a new superstar was born on the ATP tour this year with Medvedev going the distance against Nadal and turning from America's hated, most villainous opponent to lovable ragtag? You know,
I really hope so. I love him. I love that he is so weird and he's so smart. And then he wasn't, you know, something that I always wished Novak Djokovic would do eventually, just embrace the role of the villain. I would love for him to do that. But clearly he's still working on his raw vegan spiritual image. So you go, Novak. But I love that this little kid just stepped up, and he's, the way he looks is amazing. He's like goofy and skinny and weird.
He looks like a musketeer.
He looks
like
an accountant, kind of.
A little bit. Then he has this like huge forehead where you think, is that where he fits all his brains in? And it's just, he's awesome. I love him. I really hope that he's the first one of the next generation to win a Grand Slam.
I mean, he might be.
It was
he
amazing
very
match.
Close.
And you know what I also love about him, he's like a little less flashy than somebody like Tsitsipas and Zverev, who are like arguably very handsome guys and have a lot going for themselves. I think girls love that. Well, it just, you know, just the way they play is very flashy, and Tsitsipas is not afraid of showing his creative side. Zverev is not afraid of showing some kind of cockiness and
fire.
Confidence. Yeah. It's cool. I'm not judging at all. I think it's cool. It's good to have different kind of characters out there. And then this, like, weird, as you said, Caitlin, accountant guy comes out. He plays weird. His technique is weird. He looks like he's not athletic, but he runs every ball down.
Yeah.
So I like that there is a third one in this whole thing, because that's what's so great about the big three, or also when Murray was there, and the big four, that they were so different and everything. So I'm really looking forward to this generation making an impact soon. Hopefully. Sorry, my English.
Hoppenhofer. The back end shove. It's like he just hits the ball weird, and then you've got these guys who are wanting to just be on the baseline, or serving and volleying to win a Grand Slam.
I love it.
I mean, it was one of the great. For me, it was one of the most entertaining matches I've watched
definitely.
In a long time. And then you had the Bianca situation, Serena.
Yeah,
US
Open was very good.
The US Open really brought it up. There were a few dull Grand Slams, especially Wimbledon. If there wasn't, imagine the final between Roger and Novak never happened. It would have been the dullest freaking Wimbledon ever on the men's tour, where everyone was just getting smoked 1-2 and 1.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. So this US Open really saved the year for me.
I agree.
On
and
both
also
sides.
You had a very good US Open too. It was really fun. You had a group of local New York hooligans.
I did have a group of ultras.
A lot of shenanigans. And she played early every day, which was not conducive to the shenanigans.
Didn't
of
get in
these
the way
hooligans.
Of the shenanigans.
Because they often come from an East Village bar, and they're like, wait, you're playing at 11? Hold on, we're still up.
We're drunk already.
Yeah, exactly.
Get over there, you know, and then the continuation at the Heineken bar with your dad.
Yes.
So
I got real drunk with your dad.
My
I was
dad
just gonna leave you
thing.
Out of being part of the shenanigans.
No, well, my dad has this thing that after every match, no matter win or lose, he goes out and buys everyone around, and then obviously the more people, the more the merrier.
Yeah.
So it turns into riots while
everyone
getting a massage and
a
drink green smoothies filled with whey protein. I think podcast recording studios make me edgy. I never wanted a podcast, but now that I'm here.
Yeah, see?
Okay, all right, we've got to talk the whole year. Fed Cup as well last
Fed Cup.
Week.
Kiki.
Wow.
Oh, man. Love to see it.
That was
you love
great.
To see what? Australia lose? Fuck you.
No, I love to see one player putting the team on her back, picking up Caro
Garcia.
Yeah,
that's been Ash Barty for 2 years.
Yeah, well, Ash Barty had a great... They shouldered defeat very well. They came down to the final match. Like, that was great. That was a great rubber. Everyone should feel happy about that. But
I mean,
Team
but
France
Kiki,
played great.
Kiki carried her team for 5 years. Ash did it for 1.5, and Kiki did it for 5. So she really deserved the whole thing.
Look, I mean, it's sour grapes for me, I'll be honest. Okay?
But Kiki has played.
I agree. Look.
But Kiki has played every year, every tie, has never backed down. Beneteau took her out in February to put in Garcia, who didn't play for 1.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And she still doesn't, you know, it's easy to be like, and especially somebody who's proud like Kiki, to then go out and like, fuck you, I've been carrying this team for 5 years and I play bad once and you take
and
me,
you
out.
Put me out.
And she's back here again. She puts them into the final and she wins the final single-handedly. I mean, I have to say chapeau to stay at our French.
Chapeau. Well, I also think like they lost the last final, right? It was Caro and Kiki who lost the crucial doubles point.
Exactly.
So that was a heartbreaker. They lost to the Czech Republic at home, right? Wasn't that at home?
At home.
Yeah, it was
play?
At home, yeah.
So like they got some redemption.
Yeah,
I mean, cool.
Listen, I'm a proud Australian and it was hard to sit and watch that happen over the period of time from 11 p.m. till 4:30 in the morning here in New York for me. And I watched every single point after, mind you, being about 7 hours earlier, fairly drunk with you, Petko, at karaoke, having quite the day. And then I had to extend my day thinking normally when you get, you know, you have a big day out, you usually go to sleep around, you know, 10 o'clock.
I go to bed at 9 on the dot.
But no, I trudged through till 4:30 a.m.
I like you said you had to.
No,
do you feel like you had to be a part of it?
Well, no, I didn't. Well, I kind of did have to because obviously I'm coaching Sam Stosur. So one of the things that we discussed prior to the day starting was, okay, let's discuss the doubles and let's talk about you when the time comes. So, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, I'm having to be very coherent and have to actually talk to her. I spoke to her before the match. So, yeah, I had to. I was working. essentially, trying to help my player that I'm working with, you know, be prepared and ready. You know, it's sad because she started the match really well. First game was great, yeah. And they broke immediately, and then they got up an early break, and you thought, okay, the tide of the crowd. I mean, mm-hmm. The crowd was unbelievable.
It was unbelievable.
It was 11,000 people. It was amazing.
I mean, I didn't coach anybody, but I also watched the whole thing.
Did you?
Just because I'm a tennis fanatic.
You watched the whole thing too? Until 4:30 in the morning?
Well, I fell asleep throughout the first set of the doubles, but I saw the whole Ayla match. I saw the end of the Kiki Mladenovic and Ash Barty match, and I watched the first set, and then I fell asleep somewhere. I want to say after the first set.
So you trudged through as well, because
I mean,
were
not all the way, but
you would,
because I thought it was a great narrative. Somebody like Ash Barty who ascends out of nowhere, prepares for the Fed Cup. She could have easily called it a day after winning the Masters, but here she is out there in front of 10,000 people in Perth, trying to bring this home tie. And then Kiki, I just love the narrative, you know, being ditched by her.
Coach.
Sorry, I'm not going to say it.
Yes,
but,
you can say it. You
no,
can
but
I'll say
it's,
it for you.
I mean, that's just, so things like that just make me angry. She told me what happened and it's just not okay the way it went down. So anyways, but just by being...
You're talking about Sasha Bajan.
Exactly, yeah.
Her.
But just being dropped by him one day after she reached the semifinals in Moscow, and then to go out, win the Masters, and then win the Fed Cup single-handedly. I just love the narrative.
And she's had, you know, obviously she had a really great run at the French Open a couple of years ago. You played her at the French Open and beat her, what was it, 2 years ago?
That was last 2014.
It was a couple years ago. No, 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 yeah. No. It was more recently.
Really?
You beat
Ding
her
dong,
like
it was
a year.
Last year.
You beat her last year.
Oh, I forgot that. Yeah.
But she has not had a great, like, great by her standard. You know, she kind of fell off in the rankings a little bit. She had, like, a little bit of a struggle, didn't defend some points.
She was playing unbelievable last year. She was top 10. She was having an incredible year, and she literally hit Paris.
Unbelievable
and
beginning of the year.
Unbelievable. Literally. Was, like, on track to make the Masters.
Oh,
no,
she was top 5 in the race in June, and then she didn't win one match anymore.
She lost to you. And then didn't win a match, I don't think, after that.
You
just took her apart at the French. But she did, because I remember in Singapore, she was an alternate. That's how close she was to making the Masters last year in singles. And she practiced with Karolina. And Pliskova beat her in the practice set, I believe it was 6-love.
Wow.
And they played a tiebreak, and Karolina won the tiebreak. And you could see on Kiki's face the drop in confidence in the matter of 3 months was unbelievable. Mm. So to go from sort of that, you know, curve of a high of highs in singles and then really a low to she wasn't even a factor in singles anymore at all in the last 12 months. So to do what she did on the weekend was pretty unbelievable. And can I just give props to Ayla Tomljanovic as well?
Yeah, because came back after a pretty rough first match.
It was brutal. Yeah. I mean,
hate to be the one that's always, I don't know, this room just makes me edgy. But I think, I think I have to criticize your captain here, Alicia Molik. I think it's unfathomable to me, if that's a word.
Yes,
I feel like I heard it somewhere before.
Yes, it's unfathomable.
I couldn't understand the move to put a player in that hasn't played Fed Cup for this country ever, who has played Fed Cup for Croatia the last time, I believe, 4 years ago, in front of a crowd that's 10,000, finals, at home in Perth, the first match, who has never experienced this kind of thing, who hasn't played that's just, and she loses 6-1, 6-1, and I can't believe how she came back from that. That's like, I have the biggest respect for that.
Well,
That was not on Ayla. This match that she loses a 6-1, 6-1, this is not on Ayla. This is on your captain. She can't put that. And I can't believe somebody who has played Fed Cup and who is so many years around tennis to make this decision. I just don't understand. And especially when you have somebody like Sam Stosur, who is so experienced on the team and who has a winning record against Kiki Mladenovic, why don't you put her there? Because I believe even if Kiki wins 7-5, 7-6, and not 1-1, I want to see with what kind of confidence she goes out the next day and if she can win the match 7-6 in the third. And this one's on Alicia Molik. I'm sorry, Alicia, I still love you, but I wouldn't have done it that way. What do you think?
Well, it's always easy to second guess after the weekend. But I think that the matchup wasn't great for Ayla in some respects because...
You mean game plan wise or tactically?
Yeah, tactical. The way that Ayla plays, certainly, especially with her serve, it wasn't going to be great if she was nervous. And yeah, you'd have to say that she was going to be bloody probably the most nervous she's ever been in her whole life. Because you and I have both played Fed Cup for our countries. I've played singles and doubles, and it's an out-of-body experience.
There is nothing like it.
You can't even prepare, and you can't... I actually spoke to Isla quite a bit that week, and just to sort of mentally try and prepare her for this moment, because it is... You don't want to scare someone, but you want them to be ready. You want to scare them, because you want them to realize that actually, no matter how positive you are throughout the whole week, oh, you're going to be fine. It's not. You're not going to be fine. Everything's going to be over the top. You're going to feel like you're having an out-of-body experience. She's never experienced anything like that, especially Australians. We're very parochial and very, you know, patriotic. And, you know, she has all of those players sitting there. And you're not used to that as a player. You're not used to 7, 8, 12 people sitting just on off the court. They're pulling for you.
Wearing your country's colors.
So, I think what happened the second day was after she had, you know, experienced that whole moment, obviously was a lot more prepared. And I think the matchup for her with Parmentier, I mean, I have to question the captaincy from France on
from
that second
Beneteau?
Day because I think that Garcia experienced what Isla did the first day, which was to shit herself against the world number one and get crushed.
Getting blanked.
And she's not confident, but neither's Parmentier. So why would he put her out on the second day?
The only way I can explain that is I think that Garcia, because that happened in our team a bunch of times, that Garcia, after being crushed, went to him and said, please don't put me, I can't, you know, because she was probably so embarrassed and felt so bad.
Yeah, but why would she be then okay to play the doubles?
And then I would believe that she told him, like, please take me out of singles. Mm-hmm. I want to focus on the doubles in case it comes down to two all, I'll be ready for doubles, but take me out. That's how, because you're right, the matchup, I think what you were talking about, Isla's shots when she's nervous tend to go to the forehands of right-handed players, and that's Kiki Mladenovic's best shot. Mm-hmm. On top of that, if you play to Kiki and give her a slow, high, neutral ball, that's what she loves most with her forehand. And Isla's forehand is loopy, so it sits up if somebody
is tight. Which is difficult for a lot of players, because most players don't like a heavy ball to the forehand, because most women on the WTA Tour have way better backhands.
Yeah.
But with Kiki, it's like, give me a forehand
all
day.
Well, let me just ask one question, because for me, you know, talk about experience and talk about, you know, using the full roster of your available players. Instead of Parmentier, assuming Caro did say something like, don't put me out there again, you know, doubles is a different thing because the energy is different and maybe I have a teammate or something, which is easy to understand as a spectator. But why not Alizé Cornet? I mean, she's kind of
you
a crazy fine. Well, I like her because she's unpredictable.
Because Parmentier...
And she gets up for big moments.
Because I think Parmentier had a pretty good experience in the semifinals, I believe, had won the second
won
match
both
to keep
singles,
them in.
But also, I believe that Cornet has never won a Fed Cup match. I might be mistaken, but I read somewhere that she was like 112 or 130.
Some players don't play well in Fed Cup.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Azarenka, not great in Fed Cup through the years.
I was really hoping Belarus would win at least.
Me too. But
just because I think it's cool. Especially
cool
2 years ago when they first came on the scene. And
that was the first time we saw Sabalenka.
And Sabalenka, you're like, who's this Valkyrie out of Belarus?
I remember they played the United States, and Lisa Raymond, of course, was the U.S. coach. And I said, oh, you guys are going to win so easy. Like, who are you playing? You're not playing anybody. And she goes, no. She goes, seriously, you have no idea. They're so good, these girls. I was like, whatever. Who? Sabalenka and Sasnovic?
Yeah.
Well, then, hello. Like, within 12 months, they're like unbelievable players.
Those in the top 30 for sure.
I was wrong. I take it back.
Just from a spectator perspective, why Fed Cup is so exciting and why some of these alternative format matches are so exciting is because you get these unpredictable results for people. Some people really get up for playing for their country. Really shit the bed for playing for their country. You know, when you get to see a rotating cast of surprises, Caro's not going to play singles. It's actually going to be Parmentier. It's exciting. It keeps you on the edge of your seat because you don't know. Maybe this player is not having the best year, but they're going to really rise to the occasion, which is what I think Kiki Mladenovic certainly did.
Oh, absolutely. And to Parmentier's credit, she nearly turned the match around in the second set. It was literally one hair to turn it around when she broke back. I could see Isla getting nervous, and that's where I respected Isla the most, that she was, after the whole experience on the day before in front of 10,000 people, she just was like, nope, and put her foot down, and that was really amazing to see.
She was great. I was really happy. Can I just add one last thing to this little button? Because you do talk about certain players. There was a player back in my day, you might not remember her, but she was from Austria. Her name was Barbara Schwarz.
yeah.
The greatest Fed Cup player in history. Literally could barely win. Well, she did okay at the French Open 1 year and had an okay career. But you put her on a Fed Cup court, this woman beat everybody. Literally. Monica Seles, Jelena Dokic when she was like top five in the world. We were up 2-0 against Austria in Austria 1 year with Barbara Schett and Barbara Schwartz. But Schwartz was not the player in the first day. And we got up 2-0 and we were like, you know, at the hotel that night, like, we're going to win. And all of a sudden, we were singing like that.
Sportsmanship award to Renee Stubbs.
And the next day, guess who came out to play? Barbara Schwartz. And took out Dokic on clay, like, in three sets. And we're like, what the fuck? And then we lost the doubles. And we lost 3-2.
Wow.
Because of Barbara. And she beat Monica Seles in the same situation when she was playing for the U.S. And it was like, she was just a player that was just, like, unbelievable in Fed Cup. And there were just some that are unbelievable and some can't win matches on the tour.
Well, this kind of brings up some of the things that I want to talk about, just sort of recapping the year a little bit. Obviously, we're coming off of the year-end finals for the women. Ash Barty claiming the number one spot at the end, having a great run, especially, like, in the fall. Fantastic year for her. And the men are currently playing their year-end finals in London. And I have to say, what I love so much about this is seeing, again, who steps up for these year-end moments and who's not. I'm watching the men right now. Zverev won yesterday. Mm-hmm. Tsitsipas won against Medvedev, which is a match that he had previously gone 0-5. Mm-hmm. Team beat Federer. Do you think it's just the three-set thing in the men's finals that allows for sort of this variety that we see? Because obviously Zverev won it last year as well, but he hasn't been able to really break through at majors. What is it about this sort of like condensed all-eyes spotlight final run that you think some players really respond to?
Well, I think it's indoors as well.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, poor old Rafael Nadal is never going to win an ATP Masters because it's always played indoors.
Yeah.
But I think that's part of it. I think the three-set format is obvious. I mean, this is why I sort of, you know, have this fight sometimes about the best of five in Grand Slams, you know, and this is why you don't have the variety of champions winning or players winning Grand Slams. Because mm-hmm. over five sets to beat a Novak or a Roger or Rafa is just a bear because mm-hmm. mentally to be out there for 3 or 4 hours is so difficult.
Yeah.
But which is why you see Zverev winning a lot of really big tournaments and not slam level because mentally he just can't keep his shit together.
Yeah.
But
who can?
But I mean, so I don't know. There's an argument for that's why you best of three would bring in more champions to the sport as well, more names. Mm. I don't know. Obviously, with the women, we see that. That's why we see more women winning different Grand Slams because over three sets, it's possible.
Yeah.
But I think that's
also,
it. And also, they're tired. Like the top players are so
exhausted. I was just
going to
say an age.
Yeah.
If you think about it, Rafa and Roger are the oldest in the whole roster of the ATP finals, and it's the end of the year. The men's play much longer than the women's.
They're still playing.
It's crazy. It's way too long. Their season is way too long. Half of them are injured. Half of them can't sustain throughout the quality. And the advantage they have, Novak, Rafa, and Roger, they are so good that they have the privilege of scheduling their thing better. But still, late November, it's hard to keep to sustain your quality. It's hard. And they are older. Roger's 37. He's always looked like he's 37. Now he's finally come to his age. When he was 18, he already looked like 37.
You can see him in like a cardigan.
And I feel like in 20 years, he's still going to look 37. Good for him.
Yeah.
And Rafa, obviously, the way he plays, he's very physical. He wins. And that's also something to consider. Novak is somebody who wins matches 1-1, and he comes off, and you feel like he hasn't sweat. If Rafa wins 1-1...
Yeah, he's pouring sweat.
He's still pouring sweat.
One point
sweat.
In, he's
He
just...
broke three knees, he lost one leg, he lost half of his hand, and he's, like, coming out like a
and
warrior,
most of his
probably
hair
bleeding, angels coming from his head. So, you know, you have to consider also the way they are playing, and I think that's when the young guys can step up and take their chances when they show a little weakness, and they smell the blood, and then they can grab them by the,
you can say it,
penis.
Oh.
Didn't see
that coming.
Wow. Okay. So that would hurt away. I don't know. I'm not a guy, so I don't know. Send us your answers to what hurts more. Grabbing your balls or your penis. Anyway, dick kicks. I will say also, let's face it. I mean, it's very prestigious, obviously, to win this tournament. I mean, it's the, you know, technically the fifth biggest tournament of the year. But, you know, the Rogers and Ruffers and Novaks, they don't count how many end-of-year finals they win.
No,
they count the Grand Slams. And I hate to say that because it should mean something, but, you know, when you after the US Open's done, someone like Rafa and Roger are like, Shut it down.
I mean, you see it with Roger. Where does he play? Basel. It's not a particularly prestigious tournament.
Yeah, it's just in his backyard.
It's just, oh, I live here. Yeah. I might as well win it.
Yeah, for the 20th again. Exactly.
So you can see how little it matters to him in that way where he's like, I'm not going to play any tournaments except the one that happens to be in my backyard.
Well, let's talk just for a second about the year in finals. And then I want to bring up fashion because we have our illustrious fashion correspondent. Oh, yeah. Well, I have some thoughts, per usual. And then we were going to get to all the amazing questions that people sent in. And they sent in plenty, some of which we've already sort of talked about. But before we get there, one thing that I noticed on the women's side is like the same players year in, year out tend to really push hard in this last swing. And I have to say, like, Elina Svitolina, to her great credit, like, this is her favorite time of year, and she always does really well in the year-end championships. Why? Why Svitolina? Like, what is this moment? Last year she won it. This year, obviously, she came very close.
I don't know. The court speed, for me, is perfect for her.
You
know,
it's slow.
It's medium pass, pace. Pass? It's a pass. It's a pass. It's a good surface. It doesn't bounce super high, so it's always in her hitting and striking zone. She likes pace. She can then redirect. She can use her speed around the court. It's very hard to hit winners on that court.
Yeah. So is that why Plíšková maybe has a hard time there?
Well, just no. Plíšková has made the semis now 3 years in a row.
True.
And has had good wins there, but she can't finish it off because she plays against a Svitolina or a Sloane Stephens previously, even though she was up 6-love, 2-love, 40-15.
But who's counting?
not me. and then, you know, previously, those types of players counterpunch her speed and make her play one more ball. Like, you know, she obviously beat Halep, but that was 6-4 in the third, and Halep wasn't, the confidence wasn't there for her after Wimbledon. And physically with her back, she's been struggling. But I think that at some point, you know, someone like a Svitolina just frustrates the living daylights out of these top players, and the ball keeps coming back. And but it is incredible. I mean, she lost that match against Ash in the final, but up until then, she hadn't lost a match in the championships.
I don't think she lost a set.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah.
I just think she brings it on. And I mean, and who wouldn't want to try for $4.5 million?
Sure.
Oh,
yeah.
Me. No, that's for sure. I think everyone would try.
But I'll try. Put me in.
Yes, but then to make.
Put me in,
and
coach.
I think what has to be considered as well is that these solid players, these counterpunchers, are for some reason, I wonder if it has something to do with explosiveness of muscles, they are much better able to keep and sustain their level throughout the whole year. I saw a really interesting statistics. It was,
here
I think,
go.
2 years ago, sorry.
No, I love
nerd
it. Professor Petkovic here.
Where Wozniacki, they had a statistic of the four quarters of the year and how much percentage of matches she would win. And she was at an average of like 45 to 48 when she was playing fine, and then at a 51% of matches she would win. And every time in the fourth quarter of the year, she went up to 68, which tells me, because she's a similar player to Svitolina,
right? Same with Radwanska.
Right?
She was the same.
Radwanska, the same. Radwanska won Tokyo and, which was back
Beijing.
Then Wuhan. So Tokyo was one of the biggest tournaments, and then Beijing a mandatory. She was the first player to win these two tournaments in a row, which was unheard of because at the end of the year, everyone's tired.
By the way, check out her last...
If you have not caught up in the feed, Radwanska joined Renee in Shenzhen.
Yeah, Shenzhen.
Shenzhen.
It was great, too.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh.
And I think that these players are just have better abilities to sustain their level over the year, to keep their level, whereas somebody like an Osaka who plays very explosive, very powerful tennis.
Kvitova, maybe she Kvitova, sucks at the end of the year.
She had one good year where she won the year-end finals, I think.
But she won everything that year.
Exactly.
She literally won six tournaments that year, and they're all indoors.
So it's really hard, I think, for those players that are explosive players that play hard, like Pliskova, that rely on the one punch, and especially the slower the courts get in the year-end finals, the harder it is for them. And I've seen it year after year now.
And I'm sure those percentages would be, you know, peaks and valleys, right? Like certain tournaments they feel comfortable, certain surfaces, certain times when they feel energetic.
Well, they like the faster courts too, because believe it or not, everyone's like, well, a faster court suits someone like a Carolina or whatever, and or, you know, Kvitova, which is true. If they're serving well, if they're not serving well, it's actually frustrating because the counterpunchers use that pace to then redirect the ball. And I mean, I think also at the end of the year, the big hitters, you know, you have to not get frustrated when you're a big hitter. You have to, okay, the ball's coming back.
Yeah.
Okay, keep grinding. Exactly. Sometimes you got to keep grinding. And if you're
and
not
the mentality,
if you don't have the mentality to hang in there, you're like, fuck this.
Yeah.
And you make a mistake.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's that's what it is. It's that crossroads in the middle of a point where you're running for a forehand or running for a back, and you're like, all right, should I drill this back cross court? Ah, fuck it, go down the line.
Yeah,
oh,
exactly.
I missed it. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Where it's that kind of mentality.
You just get annoyed by at one point where you don't get annoyed maybe in earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
whatever it is. But it's really interesting to look at that.
But she didn't win the tournament. Ash Barty did. Well done.
Hey,
Ash,
yes.
Well,
Ash
I mean, but Ash is not a really a big hitter either, if you consider. She plays like...
She's just so smart. All court player.
Yes, all court player.
She uses the slice. She has, you know, her backhand has definitely the two-hander has improved.
Mm-hmm. She drives her forehand. She really gets
brutal.
You off the court. You give her a short ball. She comes in. She has a great serve. But she's not considered a big hitter. I would say.
She's not acing or first strike.
No, she's actually got a very big serve. I mean,
it's a great kick. I mean,
for
she's
somebody
also got a great
of her
kick.
Height.
She's my height. I know. I can't believe it.
She's
really? Oh, she's a little taller.
She's 5'5".
Really? No, she's a little bigger than that.
We could look it up. I don't know, but
maybe 5'6".
That's
six.
How I am, 150 pounds in my profile. Like, maybe when
so
I was
Serena.
5 years old.
Serena hasn't changed her profile since she got on tour
technically
either.
Technically, we're not lying. No. I was 150 pounds when I was 5 years old.
Shut up.
We could weigh you now after your off season of beers and...
Oh my God.
No, Ash just has a great service motion and she gets all the pop out of it. And it's quick motion, so it's hard to reach. She gets that ball toss up.
It's very hard.
No, technically, it's also beautiful. I mean, there's no hitch. It's
pretty good.
And you're right. It's really, really hard
to
read.
It's fast.
Really hard. Yes, that's the thing.
Because
you get ready, you see the ball, and all of a sudden, it's it's weird.
You played her this year.
I played her
at
her best. I think I played her at her best.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a joke. Because I was playing. Okay, I didn't play. I definitely didn't play my best match. But you know these matches. I had the similar experience with Osaka, where you know you're not playing your best, but you have the feeling even if I did play my best, I would have probably lost 4-4, not 2-2.
That's brutal.
But I still don't think I could win this, and that's very, very rarely I have this feeling because I am somebody who can beat these big players.
Yeah.
But those were two. I had it also once with Serena. Those were the three matches where I played not great, but where I had the feeling even if I did play my best tennis, I probably would have still lost like straight sets.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see. Wah, it's okay. I can live with that.
You have and you did. And you lost a French Open match to Ash Barty, who went on to win the tournament. Yeah. Obviously, her first Grand Slam.
Hey,
and then you,
it's you. Whoever beats you at the French wins the tournament.
Yeah, last year I lost in the third round to Halep, and then she won the tournament.
You should get paid. People should ask to
be
in your
like
part
a perfect,
of the draw.
Petko's the perfect practice partner.
No, I think I should get paid just regardless of anything, but nobody feels the same way.
We're giving you a ton of money to do this podcast, right?
Yeah,
the
you're
fashion
giving
correspondent.
Me zero money.
Hey.
You are giving me a cold brew coffee.
Yeah, well, I'm drinking it, though.
Nope. Okay, can we briefly touch on my favorite topic? Maybe you guys have given this a lot of thought. Maybe you haven't. But I want to introduce two outfits as my favorite and least favorite of the year.
Yes.
And then I want you guys to tell me what you think.
Okay.
I personally thought the...
We have very different tastes, but go ahead.
We do. I think listeners can draw their own conclusions as to whose taste they want to trust. No no commentary.
No shots fired.
No shots fired. The Tulle kits at the French Open from Nike with all those cool skeleton people. It was sort of weird, but I thought it was really great. There was a lot of like black and white and a very sort of like strange print. And I think it looked good against the red of the clay. And I thought it was cool and weird. And I've seen civilians, a.k.a. me types, who play on the courts for no money or glory and have painful forehands or whatever, look really good in it. So I feel like it was like a real high point of the year. Like, okay. I like that they kind of went weird. And I thought it looked pretty good. It looked good on Svitolina. It looked good on like Dan Evans. Like everyone who kind of showed, Taylor Fritz pulled it off pretty well. I thought everyone kind of looked good in it.
I agree that the black for some reason looks really good against the red of the clay. Mm. Like every time they bring in, I know it was a very controversial outfit, the Adidas with the zebra.
Oh, the Y3.
Yeah.
That was great. I loved it.
I mean, I kind of did too. And I spoke to one Adidas representative at that time, and he told me that they didn't
It's Adidas, not Adidas.
Yeah, Adidas.
Adidas.
And he told me basically that this collection was something they didn't care how much. There was we talked about this, Caitlin, before. It was like a solely brand building thing where they were like, they just wanted to go viral on social media. Yeah. They just wanted to be talked about. And they didn't really care how much it sold. And I think they really managed to
do
that.
Cool.
Everyone was talking about it. Either people hated it or people liked it.
Yeah.
And I feel the same way because I was reading a lot on social media about that outfits, and people were either like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen. Yeah. They're going full goth. The Addams Family is back. Totally. What's going on? But I do agree that the black looked really great against the red.
Yeah. The zebra. I think the famous screenshot that a lot of people took was Team and Zverev playing against each other because they were both sort of new to the scene and everyone was trying to like check them out, and they kind of had the hype of like being an interesting preview of like what's to come, and they're both wearing this like insane zebra outfit and everyone was like, this is an atrocity or this is amazing, which I thought was cool.
You
were saying this is so cool.
I thought it was cool.
Gonna go and buy
the
it.
Second one I really like is the Adidas Parley, the stuff that was at the
last year's Wimbledon.
That's Palace.
Oh, Palace, yeah.
You were supposed to bring me all of your Palace stuff.
Yeah.
Did you?
I didn't.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
I've been asking Petco for shit for years. And
I try to make my requests
few. How much do you think I get? You know what I get in my apartment? I'll like, look at the mail. I'm like, what the hell is this? What have I ordered? You know, and then I'm like, this is so random. I'll open the package up. I'm like, what the fuck? I didn't order this. And then I'll look at the label and it says, Andrea Petkovic. Yeah. I'm like, what the hell? She's
what is
like
it?
Ordering shit and it's turning up in my apartment.
Wait, but is it for her or for you?
For her. I'm like minding her stuff like in my apartment. I'm like, God damn it. I know what, you know, what was it? Some jacket one time?
Yeah.
And I like pulled this jacket and I was like,
No, the skirt, the plastic
skirt. Oh, yeah, the plastic skirt. That's right. It was a plastic skirt.
Like a latex skirt.
I know I order a lot of stuff online when I'm away. Like, I order so much shit in China.
That's like, fun. It's online, like Christmas so when you get back.
And like, it is. It's like what my next door neighbor, whose name happens to be Caitlin.
She's cool.
She is very
cool. We're all
cool. Yeah. Caitlin's like, went into, like, she waters my plants. Thanks, Caitlin. She goes and waters my plants. She's like, you've got a lot of packages downstairs. You know, I kind of put them away. Anyway, one time I came home and I opened it up and I'm like, I don't remember. Why would I order a plastic skirt? Was I drunk?
I kind of want you to wear it now.
Well, did I? Well, it fits me because we're the same size.
Well, I love the skirt because I have a background picture of myself in that skirt on my phone.
Okay. Yes. Well, there you go. Well, and I was like, and then I finally looked at the package and I saw Andrea
Petkovic. Selves as their screensavers on their
She didn't
phones.
Even tell
I
me,
love
though.
You. That's amazing.
She didn't even tell me.
That's amazing. Parley.
Back to fashion.
The Adidas Parley was this year's Australian Open, all the stuff that was made from recycled water bottles. And it was sort of sea foam green. And there was a beautiful, nice, like little pastel pink offset
that I thought was really great. I loved the concept. I really didn't like. Did you like the color?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was
a
flattering
really
color.
Like,
but I mean, you know, I'm
I
one person.
I didn't like the color. And also, I don't like, you know what I don't like, but that's maybe just me. I want it to be like tied to my body because I'm
she
32.
She wants to show her hot
well,
body.
Listen,
that's
I'm
what she's trying to tell him.
And
I've got an
like I'm 20. I look amazing, and people should know. And they give me these tops.
And they're boxing.
I'm just joking. Guys.
She's not so at all
not
joking.
She's so not joking.
1,000% not
but
joking.
So either give me a longer top that I can put into my skirt so I can show off my waist, or give me a crop thing where I can still show off my waist. But don't give me the middle thing where I can't put it into my skirt and I can't show, you know.
So show my 8-pack.
Exactly.
Fair.
I worked very hard for this.
Yeah, I know you do.
You should have it. Okay.
I do agree with you. Yeah, that's certain people need that cut. But Petco's not one of
no,
them.
No, me. I do. I'm
no,
like,
I'm not
oh,
looking at you like that.
It could be don't, anything. Could be
don't take
here.
It personally.
Oh, no, no. I'm celebrating
I just happen
it.
To be looking at you.
But let's talk about that a little bit. Do you think we can, I mean, I think the
change the fashion of tennis?
No, no, no. That's not that. I think that people are talking about environment. Greta Thunberg is a big thing.
Oh, we love her.
And I mean, tennis has a real problem with the restringing of rackets, putting them into plastic bags, every single racket. There's a lot of things that I think tennis community could do to save a little bit on plastic, be a little bit more environmental friendly. So I was really glad to be part of that Adidas Parley collection, where it was like, let's at least bring out the idea into the sports world that we too can make a difference. If that's going to lead somewhere, that's the question. But just to create a little awareness that sport's not... it's part of society. It is an outward of society.
No, I agree.
You know, I hate this when people are like, oh, don't stick to sports. Why are you speaking about politics? It's not like sports is outside of society and outside of politics.
Well, no, because what we're doing is we're bringing, awareness to what happens behind the scenes. Because a lot of the questions we get asked all the time is, you know, we want the behind the scenes stuff, you know, which we try to do at Racquet, is bring sort of the stories of what happens. And yeah, I mean, Rafael Nadal, every single player gets... 5, 6, 7, 8 rackets restrung every single day at a tournament.
Yeah.
So every day, 5 or 6 of those plastic bags go around those rackets. You see them when they go on the court and they take it out of the bag and they throw it and they give it to the ball kid and the ball kid throws it in the garbage.
And chokes a dolphin.
And chokes a dolphin. No, but I mean, it's true. It's like, what? Come on, like tennis community, let's come up with, up with a better idea of how to put these rackets. There's a couple to go into a plastic bag.
Well, I don't. The thing is, all the
Sam Stosur reuses hers. Let me just say, she often takes them back, like in Shenzhen. She said to the stringers, "Oh no, he just put it in these bags again." Yeah. So, well, I mean, players can make an effort.
I mean, so the thing is, what people say is right. If you play with a gut string, in order to protect the tension, you put it in a bag that is basically not giving it out to the outworldly fractions,
oxygen,
whatever.
Sure,
it might. Exactly. But all the bags come with thermo parts in them. So I don't use plastic. I just put them into the part where it's thermo protected, I want to say. It's not
That's
the right word.
Amazing.
That's
sounding.
But well done.
Thermo protected.
Yeah,
trademark. So I just put it there. I don't need a plastic bag. And I'm sure it's just habits. And the thing is, we're already one of the... we're not great on our carbohydrate footprint, I want to say, with traveling.
It's not carbohydrate.
Carbon.
But...
I'm trying here.
You know, you eat carbohydrates.
But the single-use plastic bottles that are on every single court and every single match.
Oh,
I mean, it's hard to imagine that that could be, you know.
Yeah. Surely
that
we
couldn't
get...
be better. Yeah, like, couldn't you get some metal bottles?
I mean,
like, get
surely...
a Swell
well,
sponsorship and,
say,
and get those things on everybody's court?
Can I just say, also, I had this conversation literally with Sam as well in Shenzhen. We're getting very greeny, and let's not talk about the greens because Australia is literally on fire right now with the climate change. And as this podcast will go to air, hopefully my mom's house will survive because it's literally it's life and death right there in Australia right now, literally. And so, you know, we were talking about water bottles.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, guys, you all think that water bottles stick in the fridge and they're cold? They travel. How many times have you seen like a big truck that's not refrigerated, has all these bottles of water, and that shit is sweating, okay?
Yeah.
And it's got sun beating down. You see these, like, at a concert, you know, and you see a billion bottles, like, being lined up to be sold, and they're sitting in sun. They're sweating, and what's sweating is toxicity into the water because of the plastic is melting into the water.
Right.
So you're getting carcinogens going into the water. And, you know, everybody's drinking that. They wonder why is cancer so high? Well, are you kidding me? Every one of us is drinking water out of a toxic water bottle that's been sweating in sun somewhere in China. And that's happening on tennis courts every single day and Gatorade bottles and all that sort of stuff. So we have to be better. We got to do better.
Just one solution, and I think we can go back to tennis. Just put in Germany, you know, when you buy a plastic bottle, you pay a euro more. And then when you give it back, you get the euro back. So for tennis, it's hard maybe to carry, you know, some people have to carry the metal or the glass bottles.
Wait,
so
who's
just
the girl that
container.
You were playing in Beijing that hurt her back? Do you remember the girl?
Butskova.
Butskova takes her own water bottle on the court every single time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's
I take my water bottle for practices always, but it's hard for because you don't have anything to fill it up in the matches. But what I want to say, just put a container in where the players can throw in the plastic bottles and then recycle them. Just bring them back, recycle them. That's just one
instead
of going
the world.
Into the
garbage.
Well,
also, I mean, one of the biggest carbon footprints besides airline travel, beef. plastic.
Beef is but really you know bad. What's number one?
Is clothing.
No.
It's clothing.
Number one is having kids.
Oh, really?
That's the biggest environmental factor.
Fuck so kids. Of all the people sitting at this table, your fault!
It's my fault. Yeah. I mean, we are at a less than replacement
Seriously?
Level
It's true,
reproduction.
Yeah. Number one I mean, is on. Kids. I mean, of course, but technically, yeah. if we stopped having kids, everyone stopped having kids today, the world would die, but climate would be great.
The animals would come back.
Yes, maybe, yeah.
Maybe. If that is not the number one, then one of the top ones is
clothing.
The creation of clothing. Just the amount of water and waste that is produced
and
by clothing.
Meat.
And meat. Yeah, same thing. It's a waste of water in addition and also like what gets cut down to make them.
All right. We'll do that podcast another day of saving
so
the world.
So worst clothing of the year. Before, while I
oh,
have you.
No, I get off clothing. I'm so bored with you and your clothing.
Why? It's so important for people who listen
to I just want to see shorter shorts on men. We've already established that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see the men's legs. Let's go back to the Bjorn Borg Fila days.
Agreed.
Like and see these guys' legs instead of it down to their ankles. I mean, knees. And with the women, I don't know. But there's a lot that can happen.
But did you have one in mind that was the worst of the year for you?
Yeah, everything that Rafael Nadal wears, from the tongues of his shoes to
really?
The really boxy shorts that make him look really fat, to the sleeveless tops.
You want to see him in a Speedo?
I want to see him looking like with a lean silhouette.
But that's the... They've never gone out of the creation of the rivalry between Raja and Rafa at Nike, where they gave polo shirts and like
yeah.
pastel colors to Raja and like neon colors and sleeveless to Rafa to
totally.
Underline the warrior against the gentleman effect. And then they forgot that Raja changed to Uniqlo at one point.
Oh my God. That was my. Okay,
you just
I got
summed it up.
I got it. My worst outfit.
Okay.
For sure, of the whole year was Raja's Uniqlo outfit at the US Open.
Brutal.
What was that again?
He looked like walking poo.
The brown one. I mean, hey, I have an outfit
like
horrible. This.
It was horrible. No, that was yours is brown. You look like a UPS driver.
I'm a UPS
he
package
looked
deliverer.
It was like green poo.
Yeah,
it was
bad.
Awful.
Diarrhea?
It's so yeah. bad.
Well,
yes.
Depends on what you ate the night before, but yes. Okay, so that was my least favorite.
Okay, good entry, despite not wanting to
or
talk
exit.
With oh, boy. Okay, should we get to questions?
Yes. Yeah, well yes.
Go Shall
ahead.
We? Okay.
Yeah.
All right, I'll start with one for Andrea.
Ooh.
Mike Taylor writes, I know Andrea Petkovic is a voracious reader. Has she read Duck's Newburyport?
Oh, I haven't.
And what did she think of it? I don't know what that book is.
I don't
but
know
tell
either.
Us what you're reading anyway, because I'm sure it's something good.
I'm reading Paul Auster's New York Trilogy right
oh,
now.
Wow.
And I've been on a quest, I texted you, yes, I've been on a quest to find the writers in New York, and I haven't found one, and it makes me so angry.
Put it out there.
What has your plan been to find the writers? Just
well,
like
I've
keeping
been
your
just,
head on a swivel kind
well,
of thing?
Well, I've just been just hanging out in bookstores and in Cobble Hill, where all the Jonathans live.
You haven't, because if you had been in Cobble Hill, you would have seen at least
you
one
think
Jonathan.
So? Well, I heard also that Paul Auster lives in Prospect Heights, so the last 3 days I've been hanging out there and I've seen
what,
zero
What, do you just stand
writer.
On the corner with
well,
a
I
sign?
Well, I just hang out in cafes and drink a lot of green tea. I have a caffeine shock. And just sit around and wait for
clothes.
The writers.
I will give anything for you to stand on a corner with a sign just with their names on it and to say, I'm here
looking
for you.
For
Please come over and
Jonathan.
Talk to me. Yeah. Jonathan, hashtag Jonathan, where are you? That's it.
I, the only thing I can suspect, I mean, I told you I saw Zadie Smith, my favorite
yes,
New York
and I haven't seen
sighting.
Her
I see
oh.
her on occasion. I've seen her a couple times.
Wow.
Every time
do
I'm
you,
like, wow, that woman is
her?
Beautiful. And then I'm like, she
oh,
looks so great. Her skin looks amazing. She's luminous. I'm like, oh, it's Zadie Smith.
Yeah.
No, of course not. She's so...
Because sitting
Why don't you
a,
put up a sign saying,
I'm not on a quest. She's on the quest.
I can't speak to you, but I'm here for you.
I love you. Just yeah. like in like yeah. Love Actually, just hold up a sign.
I'm reading Sapiens
Everything
right now, and I'll tell you, it's the world is... We're fucked.
Great.
Yeah.
Amazing. I'm reading about an alien invasion. So
oh,
I'm kind
wow.
of actually rooting for the aliens. I'm reading the Three
Wait,
Body Problem
Are we
trilogy.
All going to Area 51?
Yes. That's going to be the field trip after this podcast.
I'm thinking, I'm kind of hoping I'll be dead before all of that happens.
You might.
You're so selfish. What about Caitlin's kid?
Well,
that is
well, that's the problem.
Destroying
the kids.
The
haven't we just. The kids are the problem.
Yeah, my kid.
I feel, I truly, I seriously, when I'm in China, I feel sorry for our kids' kids. Because this, the pollution
yeah, it's terrible.
In that country is so outrageous.
And it's gotten much better. It's gotten much better.
I know, but that just proves to you how bad this is.
Yeah, I got pneumonia when I lived in China. My lung, you
really?
Get, like everyone who lives there
yeah, yeah.
for a season gets a,
well,
lung ailment. It was crazy.
Yeah.
And then the doctors were like, oh yeah, this is normal. Everyone gets this. The first, their first winter in Beijing.
Just like sit
and I was
through?
Like, Yeah, it was just like soot.
It's gross.
Oh yeah, I read about it. That something when the weather grows cold, something mm-hmm. happens to the pollution. It just sits well. I don't know. I don't want to get into it because I didn't check my scientific facts.
The WTA trainers came back. Both of them are sick because I think that's what happened to them too.
Yeah.
Anyway,
people get hazard pay for living there. Okay, Ian Clark writes, and you.
We love Ian. Ian's actually in the fire area up in New South Wales.
Well, Ian, so, I hope you are safe. Okay. And your house and your home and your loved ones are okay. Ian Clark writes, and I'm going to address this to you, Renee. Can men stop wearing baggy knee length shorts and model out Tootsie Pots and Nadal?
Yeah, there we
Wait,
go.
Wait, did you did he shorts. Listen? Did you influence him? Did you pay him to say that?
I swear to you, no, I didn't. He's just a big fan, and he's a big tennis fan, and he was very big in fashion.
See?
So
he doesn't like the boxy
No,
shorts.
He likes to see...
Would you like to see
I
that would, too?
I mean, if I was a designer, I would totally bring back the Bjorn Borg, John McEnroe era
Did I not
for
just
men.
Say that? Even though I'm not the fashion correspondent.
No, but I thought you just want them a little, but I actually want the short, because if we have to show off our
shorts.
Body all the time.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't
Tennis
they?
Player legs are great. They? We should see them.
Yeah.
Also, I have to imagine they're,
and
their calf those baggy
muscles
shorts
are never
like kind of...
Hashtag objectify them all.
Okay. This is a Fed Cup question from MK Bromley. Mm-hmm. How do players feel about removal of home away games for Fed Cup? And how will this affect growth of tennis in their countries? So this is this final match between Australia and
was last time. We'll have a final
France.
In a home yeah. away. Kind.
The change will now be a neutral territory.
Mm-hmm. Listen, it's going to be in Budapest, but I think
beautiful
it's also
city.
Beautiful city. It, you will play home and away in the first tie, mm-hmm. and then the finals will be in Budapest. Where I've gone through a couple of different formats for Fed Cup, and
because she's so old.
Hashtag fuck you. and the first couple of years that I played Fed Cup was in Frankfurt. And that was the last time Australia was in the final, actually, in 1993, a long time ago. But we did play the same format where we played it all in 1 week. And it was great. And, you know, you still have that same pride and passion and for winning. But you lose that atmosphere of being home away. We actually played Germany and beat Germany in Germany there. So we had that parochial crowd.
Yeah.
But I think that... The ITF is trying to tweak as best they can to try and help the players play. First of all, play more. As you know, Andreas played millions of matches for Germany. So to try and, you know, get more players to play.
Meaning like some of the players don't sit out.
I'll give you an example. Last year, Karolina Pliskova and Kvitova didn't play the finals for the Czech Republic. Mm-hmm. And they ended up winning. But but still at home, they didn't play because they were injured. Mm-hmm. It's just too long.
Yeah,
I mean, for Ash, you know, who, as you said at the beginning, good for her to go and play.
Yeah.
But it meant
so much
to her. But
she hadn't,
won it.
You know, the thing is, it's not a phrase. People say that, but I think to somebody who has played the whole season, and I finished my season in October, and I still think I could have used more of a break, a longer break to recover my body. It's not a phrase for me like good for her for playing. I actually mean that good, not good for her, but respect and good for her that she goes out there and, you know, the
but
Masters
would she do
is
it year after
high
year
pressure.
After year? Probably not. And that's the problem for the Czech team. They've won it like eight times.
Yeah,
so we're Australia.
All
we haven't won it in 45
so
years. So for Ash, this was like a glory moment for her to maybe bring that cup to Australia where we have a huge amount of history with Fed Cup and, you
Davis
know,
Cup.
And Davis Cup. And our country is very, we are very, you know, we love our sports. So for Ash, you know, to bring that back. But next year and the year after, then year after, is she going to want to keep doing that? I would say probably not. Just like for Petra and for Karolina, it was, became very, very difficult. So I think the way that the format is now, we've lost a little bit of that, and that's sad. Having said that, the ITF also know this is a very fluid situation, and it could change in 2 years, and we could go back to home and away ties. They're just trying to find a fix for not having the players play so much.
And so the idea would be it is going to be in one neutral space. Yeah. It's kind of like a World Cup. All the teams, it's a playoff system. So everyone sort of would travel to a place, much like a
so
World Cup.
So all the
Cup
Aussies can go
Olympics.
To Budapest.
But there really is a trend this year, isn't it? The ATP launching the ATP Cup, the Davis Cup and the men's changing their format, the Rod Laver Cup. So it's been really a trend that tennis officials, I want to say, or people in tennis, the
politicians of our sport are trying to bring more team sports into the awareness, to spread tennis a little more into countries. And it always creates changing things always creates problems on the other hand of the stick, I guess.
I was reading,
closing. The problem is it's great because as a tennis player, an individual, you love playing on teams.
Mm-hmm.
I loved playing team events. You love playing team events. It's like you don't get it very often. So mm-hmm. to actually play on a team in a country is so awesome. The problem is there's like 1,000 of them now. The problem is tennis does not fall under one umbrella. There's the ITF, there's the Grand Slams, there's the ATP, there's the WTA, there's tournament owners, there's, you know, Octagon and IMG. Yeah. And it's like everyone's got a finger in every single pie. The problem is they're all trying to, I'm just going to say it. They're all trying to fuck up over each other with who has the biggest team cup event now.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's like, guys, like, seriously, like, that's the biggest issue for me, is that we could do so much of a better job, tennis, of branching all of us together and making it bigger and making more money. But the problem is everyone's trying to cut a piece of the pie, and it's diluting. Sometimes it's diluting certain events, and it's a bummer.
Well, I think the events that have really taken a hit with the creation of all of these exhibition matches, and obviously the rejiggering of Fed and Davis Cups, which means more to certain players than others, are like the day in and day out tournaments. You'll notice when everyone is advocating for more equal pay or higher pay, or, you know, all those pay negotiations are about the slams. They're not about like who's getting paid what in a mandatory, right?
Yeah.
And so to me, what I like very much about tennis is not necessarily the slams. I like the tour of it. I like the fact that this group of players goes from one far-flung beautiful place to another.
Merry women.
And I think it's cool. And obviously it's the best events in my mind are the ones that have both genders. I love the fact that there's a mixed event. I love the fact that a lot of these exos, you do combine genders. In the next issue of Racquet, which we're closing now, we have a story about the world team tennis creation, but specifically the creation of a team called the Soviets.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened during like the early 80s when like hostilities between communist era, you know, the Soviet Union and the States were like at a high.
Right.
Obviously, the backdrop of the boycott of the Moscow Olympics was sort of being talked about. But this was like a beautiful brief moment where everyone was kind of like, this could be cool. This was amazing. And it actually sort of thrived before it ended up dying a terrible death. So this isn't the first time that like that part of it. I mean, the World Team Tennis is still around, kind of. But, you know, this sport has been grappling with this for a long time. And for me, it's like there's two very simple solutions, one of which is join the tours. And then you have,
I agree with
essentially,
that.
You have a collective bargaining power. And then you can say, well, both the tours, the all men the men
don't
and
want
women,
the women.
The men don't want the women. Yeah.
Well,
mostly.
I mean, the
mostly, yeah.
amount of times I have heard, well, why do women earn the same? Well, they should, the men are playing best of five, the women are. I would give every money that I've ever earned in tennis back if we would get the equal pay in the tours and get slightly less in the Grand Slams, because nobody understands we don't have equal pay.
Yeah,
women earn much less. I want to say a third less, maybe half less than men do. The only thing what we have is equal prize money in four of the biggest tournaments.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to listen, but the men play best of five. And I agree. I would gladly give away that right to have equal prize money at the Grand Slams if I could have equal prize money at all the other tournaments, because we as women would earn much more on a constant basis and it would be a whole different story. But like this, nobody ever really agrees. Nobody ever gets on our side because the men play best of five and we only play best of
three. Which
is
one of the many reasons I think getting rid of best of five would be totally
would shut everybody
no-brainer.
Up. And then they're like, well, everyone's
it's boring,
like,
it's too long, it only benefits certain players.
Oh, and then, but then there's the opposite conversation. It's like, well, you know what? Then women will play best of five. Who wants that?
No.
I mean, come on. Like, you know,
the women can play best of five.
We had it at the WTA
Championships.
It's
the stupidest thing to do to tennis.
Yeah. It's so dumb. It's like, guess what? The women don't have the big serves. They don't have the power of the men. The men's matches can be quicker. It's like
maybe, and also the speed of the surfaces has slowed down. So you can't have a best of five match that takes under 2 hours.
No.
Whereas like on grass, you actually could have.
Wozniacki played 3.5 hour women's final.
Can you
it
imagine
was longer
adding
than the men's?
And
the men's was 5 sets.
Agreed.
Yeah,
agreed.
But now think about the new generation who's grown up on YouTube videos that last 2 to 3 minutes.
Yeah,
you think they're going to sit through?
Yeah.
And we have to think about the new generations.
Of course.
Everyone is dying.
And to the sport's great
because
credit,
of climate
people
change.
Are having kids. Caitlin.
You know what? Everyone should live in a metropolis where public transit and resource-intensive heating and cooling costs are amortized by huge, high-density living. So that's my answer.
Just stop.
The overpopulation problem is it's on Asia. Okay, it's true.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.